I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is May 25th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. For over a century, we have designed every aircraft around a set of assumptions about how air behaves when it moves over a wing. Lift, drag, boundary layers. These are not suggestions. They are the physics that keep machines in the sky. Engineers don't debate them. They build on top of them. Or they did. A finding has surfaced that challenges one of the foundational principles of aeronautical engineering. Not a refinement, not an edge case at extreme altitudes or hypersonic speeds. A fundamental correction to something the field has treated as settled science since the early 20th century. The implications are not trivial. We're talking about how wings are shaped, how fuel efficiency is calculated, how simulation models are built. If this holds up under scrutiny, it doesn't just change one equation. It restructures the assumptions underneath an entire discipline. Today on Tech Talk, we are pulling this apart. What exactly was overturned, how the evidence was gathered, and what it means for everything from commercial aviation to drone design. Because when the physics change, everything built on top of those physics has to be re-examined. Stay with me. This is the front page. I'm Link. Let's get into it. First up, the cat-and-mouse game between AI safety teams and jailbreak hackers just entered a new phase. The Verge is reporting on a growing class of attacks that exploit chatbot personalities. Not their code, not their training data, but the behavioral patterns baked into how they respond. Early jailbreaks were blunt instruments. Tell the bot to ignore all previous instructions and watch it comply. Those days are mostly over. Modern attacks are more psychological than technical. Hackers are using role-play scenarios, emotional manipulation, and context framing to push models past their guardrails, essentially treating AI systems the way a social engineer treats a human target. Here's the tension. You can't lock down a chatbot's conversational range without destroying its usefulness. Words like bomb and sarin have perfectly legitimate contexts in chemistry, journalism, and history. The challenge isn't vocabulary filtering, it's contextual reasoning. And that's a much harder problem to solve with fixed rules. As AI systems get embedded deeper into enterprise workflows, healthcare, and government operations, the attack surface isn't just technical anymore. It's linguistic. And that brings us to the next story, because more capable models mean a larger target. Anthropic is preparing to release its Mythos-class models to the public. Details are still thin. The Register reports the models remain under restricted access while the company works out guardrails. But they're already extending access to additional users, including government agencies. What's notable here isn't just the model itself, it's the release strategy. Anthropic is threading a needle between open access and controlled deployment, using a phased rollout that lets them stress test safety measures with progressively wider audiences. The fact that government users are in the early access cohort tells you where the commercial pressure is pointing. Worth watching how this plays against the jailbreaking story. More capable models with broader access means a larger target for exactly the kinds of personality-based exploits we just talked about. Now, from the software side to the hardware side, and a number that should reframe how you think about AI infrastructure costs. According to analysis from Epoch, memory now accounts for nearly two-thirds of AI chip component costs. That's up from 52% in early 2024 to 63% by late 2025. Let me put that in perspective. Total component spending on AI chips roughly doubled in that period. From $22 billion to $52 billion. HBM, high bandwidth memory, alone accounted for $20 billion of that $30 billion increase. Logic die costs held steady around 13 to 14%. Packaging dropped. Auxiliary components dropped. Memory just kept climbing. This is a supply chain story as much as a technology story. The companies that control HBM production, primarily SK Hynix, Samsung, and Micron, are sitting at a choke point in the entire AI buildout. Every new model, every larger context window, every denser architecture, it all demands more memory. And that demand is reshaping chip economics from the ground up. Shifting gears entirely, a quality of life win for PC gamers. Tom's Hardware tested Microsoft's new advanced shader delivery system on the Radeon RX 9070 XT. And the results are significant. Up to 95% faster game load times, and up to 33% improvement in 1% low frame rates. Here's how it works. Instead of compiling shaders locally on your machine, which can take minutes and still miss edge cases that cause stuttering. Developers pre-compile shaders offline and distribute them as part of the game download. The compiled output targets a range of hardware without needing the physical GPU present during compilation. The underlying format is a SQLite database called a state object database, which gets converted into pre-compiled shader packages. It's a practical infrastructure-level fix to a problem gamers have complained about for years. Not flashy, but it directly addresses one of the most common friction points in the PC gaming experience. Four stories, one thread connecting at least half of them. AI systems are getting more capable, more expensive, and harder to secure, all at the same time. That tension isn't going away. That's the front page. I'm Link. Stay sharp. The deep dive, the roughness paradox, how imperfect surfaces may slash aerodynamic drag. For 86 years, the rule was simple. If you want something to move fast through air, make it smooth. Smoother surfaces, less drag, higher speeds. Every aeronautical engineer learned it. Every aircraft manufacturer built around it. It was one of those principles so foundational that nobody questioned it anymore. And then a team at Tohoku University in Japan quietly demonstrated that a surface too rough to be smooth, but too fine to see with the naked eye, can reduce aerodynamic drag by up to 43.6%. Not by managing turbulence, by preventing it from forming in the first place. This is the deep dive. I'm Link. Let's get into it. To understand why this matters, you need to understand what aerodynamic drag actually costs us. Every commercial flight, every high-speed train, every vehicle on a highway is burning a significant portion of its energy, just pushing air out of the way. In aviation alone, fuel costs driven by aerodynamic drag represent billions of dollars annually, and a corresponding share of global carbon emissions. The relationship between drag and energy is not linear. As speed increases, drag grows with the square of velocity. So at high speeds, even small percentage reductions in drag translate to enormous savings in fuel, range, and performance. The foundational rule governing drag reduction traces back to 1940, to a Japanese scientist named Ichiro Tani. Tani studied the relationship between surface roughness and something called the boundary layer transition. He concluded that roughness on a surface caused the airflow to become turbulent sooner, which increased drag. Given the manufacturing tolerances of the era, this was a practical death sentence for laminar flow on real-world surfaces. The message was clear. Polish everything, make it as smooth as physically possible. And for over eight decades, that's exactly what the industry did. But here's what makes science interesting. Tani himself, in 1989, revisited experimental data from the 1930s, pipe flow experiments conducted by the fluid engineer Johann Nicolaes. And Tani suggested something that contradicted his own earlier work. He proposed that roughness may not necessarily only promote turbulent transition. Under certain conditions, it might do something else entirely. That idea sat largely unexplored for years. Until now. Let me walk through what's actually happening here, because the physics is genuinely fascinating. When air flows over a surface, say an aircraft wing, it forms what's called a boundary layer. This is an extremely thin region of air, right at the surface, where the flow velocity transitions from zero, at the wall itself, to the full speed of the surrounding airstream. This boundary layer starts in a laminar state. Laminar means the air molecules are moving in orderly, parallel layers. Smooth, predictable, and critically, low friction. But as the air travels further along the surface, small disturbances accumulate. Eventually, the flow becomes unstable and transitions to a turbulent state, chaotic, swirling, high friction. That transition point is where drag spikes. For decades, the assumption was that any surface imperfection, any bump, scratch, or irregularity, would introduce disturbances that accelerate that transition. Smooth equals laminar, rough equals turbulent. Simple. What Associate Professor Aiko Yakino and her research group at Tohoku University's Institute of Fluid Science have demonstrated is that a specific type of roughness, called distributed micro-roughness, or DMR, actually delays that transition. The irregularities are random, extremely fine, and invisible to the naked eye. And instead of feeding energy into the disturbances that cause turbulence, they appear to dampen them. Now, this is important to distinguish from another well-known drag reduction technology. You may have heard of riblets, sometimes called the shark skin approach. Riblets are fine longitudinal grooves, about 0.1 millimeters wide, carved along the direction of airflow. They work by organizing the vortices that form near the wall in regions where the flow is already turbulent. Riblets don't prevent turbulence, they manage it after it's already there. DMR operates on a completely different principle, in a completely different flow regime. It works in the laminar zone before turbulence begins. The micro-roughness interacts with the instability mechanisms in the boundary layer in a way that suppresses the growth of disturbances. The flow stays laminar longer. The transition point moves downstream. And because laminar flow has dramatically lower skin friction than turbulent flow, the total drag drops. A 43.6% reduction. From a surface treatment you cannot even see. One of the critical enablers of this result was measurement precision. The research team developed a new wind tunnel methodology that eliminates support bars, the physical structures that traditionally hold test models in place inside the tunnel. Those support bars introduce their own flow disturbances, which contaminate the data. By removing them, the team could measure the boundary layer transition and drag forces with a clarity that previous experiments simply could not achieve. The measurement infrastructure made the discovery possible. So what does this mean practically? If DMR can be applied as a surface treatment, and the fact that it consists of random, fine-scale roughness suggests it could be far simpler to manufacture than precision-machined riblets. You're looking at a technology that could be retrofitted. Not just designed into new aircraft from scratch, but potentially applied to existing airframes, train bodies, and vehicle surfaces. Consider aviation. A 43% drag reduction on the laminar portions of a wing would translate to meaningful fuel savings on every single flight. Multiply that across a global fleet of tens of thousands of commercial aircraft, and you're talking about a measurable impact on both operating costs and emissions. And unlike redesigning an entire airframe for laminar flow, which requires extreme manufacturing precision and is notoriously difficult to maintain in service, a surface coating or treatment could be reapplied during routine maintenance. For high-speed rail, the equation is similar. Bullet trains like Japan's Shinkansen already push the boundaries of aerodynamic optimization. A surface treatment that extends laminar flow could meaningfully reduce the energy required to maintain cruising speed, particularly through tunnels where aerodynamic effects are amplified. But I want to be precise about the caveats. This is a wind tunnel result. The 43.6% figure comes from controlled laboratory conditions on a specific test geometry at specific flow speeds. Real-world surfaces experience rain, ice, dirt accumulation, insect impacts, and degradation over time. Whether DMR can maintain its effectiveness under operational conditions is an open and critical question. Wind tunnel models are smaller than actual aircraft. Scaling boundary layer behavior from laboratory dimensions to full-size wings introduces complexities that are notoriously difficult to predict. Flight testing will be essential before any of this reaches production. What I find most compelling about this research is the pattern it represents. This is a case where the original scientist, Tani, planted the seed of doubt in his own foundational work. Decades later, a lineage of researchers at the same institution followed that thread. Kohama's group in the 1990s showed fibrous roughness could delay transition. Now Yakino's group has quantified the effect with DMR and developed the measurement methodology to prove it rigorously. That's a 90-year arc, from Nicolaus's pipe experiments in the 1930s, through Tani's original study and his later reinterpretation, to a result that inverts the principle he established. It's also a reminder that in engineering, the assumptions we stop questioning are often the ones most worth revisiting. The idea that smooth equals fast was so intuitive, so well supported by the original data, that it became invisible. It stopped being a hypothesis and became a law. And it took a team willing to look at the boundary layer with fresh eyes and fresh measurement tools to see what was hiding in plain sight. The practical timeline here is long. We're years away from DMR coatings on commercial aircraft, but the principle has been demonstrated. And if it holds a scale, the implications ripple across every industry where aerodynamic drag is a constraint. Sometimes the answer isn't to polish the surface until it's perfect. Sometimes the answer is to make it just rough enough. That's the deep dive. I'm Link. Stay curious. This is the neural network, where I trace the signal lines running beneath this week's headlines. And the pattern I keep landing on is this. The capabilities that once required nation-state budgets and decades of classified research are compressing into things you can spray from a can or build in a garage. Let me walk you through what I'm seeing. A Turkish researcher just published 7 years of work on a sprayable stealth coating called Kershot 3.0. It uses volcanic basalt and pumice, porous rock structures engineered at the microscopic level to trap radar energy and convert it to heat. The claimed performance is a 43 decibel reduction in radar return. For context, typical radar absorbent materials, or RAM, achieve somewhere between 20 and 30 decibels. Every 10 decibels represents a tenfold reduction in signal strength. So 43 decibels, that's orders of magnitude beyond the standard. Those numbers still need independent validation. That matters. But the concept itself is what I'm tracking. Because stealth used to look like the F-117 Nighthawk, a billion-dollar airframe where every single surface angle was computed to deflect radar returns. Then it evolved into the B-21 Raider and F-35, where decades of computational advancement let engineers blend aerodynamics with low observability. These are programs measured in hundreds of billions of dollars and spanning generations of engineering. And now someone is proposing you spray it on a drone that costs a few hundred dollars. Meanwhile, on the performance side, a pair of hobbyist builders just pushed a custom drone to 453 miles per hour. That's roughly 80% of commercial jetliner cruising speed. Their key innovation? Handmade carbon fiber propeller blades with aggressive pitch angles and sawtooth leading edges. Those serrations generate controlled vortices along the blade surface, preventing airflow separation at steep angles. It's the same boundary layer physics that aerospace engineers spend years modeling in computational fluid dynamics, applied here by two people with a YouTube channel and a passion for speed. They lost their first drone at speed because the Doppler shift and signal overload broke the radio link. Built another one. Flew again the next day. That's the builder mentality at its purest. And notice the thread connecting back to our deep dive. Boundary layer control, whether it's micro roughness on a wing or sawtooth edges on a propeller blade, keeps showing up as the lever that unlocks performance gains. The physics doesn't care whether you're in a university lab or a garage. Pull back and look at what these two stories share. Stealth coatings derived from volcanic rock. Both are examples of sophisticated aerospace principles being implemented outside traditional defense infrastructure, at a fraction of the cost, by small teams or even individuals. Now layer in what's happening above the atmosphere. Open source orbital tracking data revealed four Russian satellites burning significant fuel to match the orbital plane of ICY-36, a commercial radar satellite operated by a Finnish-American company that provides reconnaissance data to Ukraine. A fifth satellite appears to be making the same maneuver. These are rendezvous proximity operations, the kind of orbital choreography that consumes enormous resources and serves very few peaceful purposes. What strikes me here is the collision of two worlds. Commercial satellite constellations have democratized orbital intelligence. A private company can now provide battlefield-grade reconnaissance to sovereign nations. And the response to that democratization is nation-state orbital maneuvering against commercial assets. A Russian deputy director explicitly called these quasi-civilian targets as far back as 2022. The boundary between military and civilian infrastructure in space isn't blurring, it's dissolving. So here's the through line I want you to sit with. Stealth, speed, orbital reconnaissance, autonomous naval vessels. Every one of these capabilities is migrating down the cost curve. The spray-on coating makes a disposable drone harder to detect. The carbon fiber propellers make it faster than most air defenses were designed to intercept. Commercial satellites provide the targeting data, and crewless vessels extend the operational reach without risking human lives. Each piece is impressive on its own. They describe a fundamental restructuring of how military capability scales. It no longer correlates neatly with budget size. A small team with material science knowledge and access to volcanic rock can approach the radar signature reduction of platforms that took decades to develop. Two builders with custom propellers can reach speeds that challenge existing countermeasures. The technical barriers haven't disappeared, but they're compressing, and the implications stretch well beyond any single conflict zone. What I'm watching is the early phase of a broader pattern, where the gap between state-level and non-state-level military technology narrows across multiple domains simultaneously. Not in one breakthrough. In dozens of quiet parallel advances. That's what the data is showing me this week, and it's a pattern worth tracking closely. I'm Link. This has been the Neural Network. Here's your optimization of the week. If you work with audio in any capacity, whether it's editing podcast clips, trimming samples, or mixing tracks, you've probably reached for a desktop app. Audacity, Logic, maybe Adobe Audition, heavy installs, license management, platform lock-in. This week, take a look at AudioMass, That's AUDIOMASS. A free, open-source, multi-track audio editor that runs entirely in your browser. No install, no account, no upload to someone else's server. Your audio stays local, processed client-side using the Web Audio API. Here's why this matters for builders. AudioMass gives you waveform editing, effects processing, spectral analysis, and multi-track mixing, all from a browser tab. It supports cut, copy, paste, fade-ins, fade-outs, normalization, compression, the core operations that cover 80% of real-world audio editing tasks. The practical integration point. Bookmark it as your lightweight audio tool. Need to trim a voice memo before dropping it into a project? AudioMass. Need to quickly normalize levels on a sample? AudioMass. Need to edit audio from a machine where you can't install software? AudioMass. Because it's open source, you can also self-host it. Fork the repo, embed it in an internal tool, or extend it for your own workflow. The codebase is clean and well-structured. A solid reference if you're building anything with the Web Audio API yourself. The optimization here is simple. Stop context switching to heavy desktop apps for lightweight audio tasks. Keep AudioMass bookmarked. It loads in seconds, does the job, and gets out of your way. That's the kind of tool that earns a permanent spot in your workflow. Not because it replaces everything, but because it handles the common case fast. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk. End of transmission.